This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, Ti Xiao Yik. It's our psychiatry series today, our monthly series, and we'll be talking about suicide and the media. How suicide is reported or portrayed in the media has a huge impact on people who are watching or reading it. And, you know, this is a conversation that arises again and again, especially when a high-profile individual dies by suicide. Tragically, just this week, Keith Flint of the band Prodigy, was reported to have died by suicide as well. So we thought it would be pertinent to revisit what is the responsibility of the media to portray suicide in an ethical manner. So in the studio with us, Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Center. Before we get into it, our phone lines are open. You can call us at 0377332900. You can WhatsApp us your thoughts, questions or comments at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon, Dr. Amir. How are you today?
Good, thanks.
Okay. I have to apologize. I have a frog in my throat. So going back to our topic for today, I think first of all, perhaps a reminder of what are our suicide rates in Malaysia, or what do we know of it at least, and do you think that it reflects the reality of the situation?
Okay, that's a really good question. Again, thank you for inviting me for this series, and I think we're really talking about something that's really important at this time, I think, as you've mentioned, about the lead for the Prodigy, and we've heard of others that lost,
yes,
as a result of suicide. Yet sometimes it's really hard to talk about it, and I think this particular discussion that we're having right now is probably quite apt. So first of all, in terms of the rates at the moment, the systematic reviews show rates of 6.8 per 100,000 population that might commit suicide. And in Malaysia, based on our suicide registry, which is a little bit dated, as you probably know, the rates are much, much lower, at about 1 per 100,000 or so.
Right.
Now, going back to your question whether it is underreported, it probably is. But at the same time, the rates have always been noted to be low in countries like ours. But again, there could be confoundings in the sense that it's not reported to begin with. You know, like I said, well, like when I was in medical school, I remember when, you know, if you say you're from Malaysia, you know, the lecturer would say, you don't have any suicides happening there. But in 2019, I think that same statement can't be made, because we've seen as well reports of what appears to be suicides happening in our country.
But how much of that do you think has to do with the fact that legally suicide and suicide attempts are considered criminal?
Well, there definitely is a factor in that, because if we know that it's a criminal offence, then people are not willing to report family members that might be at risk, because there's that possibility that once they report, they might actually be committed. And therefore, there lies that bit of a dilemma.
Yes.
It's the same thing a little bit with drug use as well.
Yes.
Because, you know, if you have possession, for example, there's a possibility, again, you might be acted upon. Mm-hmm. And then family members that have family members with drug use sometimes are a little bit reluctant to come forward for help. So I suspect the same analogy is the same. We definitely know that from, at least from clinical cases, sometimes some families do actually ask us, when they brought that family member who is in crisis, whether or not we'll be charging them as a result of them bringing. And the answer, at least from the health perspective, is a no. So these individuals, we know, are vulnerable. They're currently in crisis. They need help. The main focus is to get that help to them.
Right. You know, before we get into the media perspective of suicide, I do think that a lot of it is framed by cultural and societal perceptions of suicide. How would you describe the level of, you know, understanding or empathy towards suicide and mental health issues in our society?
I think there's a lot of work still that is needed to be done. To be fair, I think in late 2018-19, there's a slight rise in mental health literacy, I think, among the community. There's a little bit more discussions. You can see in the number of non-governmental organizations, I think, have risen, at least over the last 5 years. There's a younger group of people that are willing to discuss about these issues, and you can see this in social media particularly. But even outside of social media, in forums and panels, you probably have seen a number of groups, organizations, companies that have come forward wanting to discuss about mental health issues and also trying to prevent members of their community from actually going into crisis and eventually either acting on a suicide thought or unfortunately succeeding in that particular attempt. So there's a little bit more, I think, discussion and awareness that's gone on. However, at the same time, there is still a lot of stigma related to suicide, suicidal behavior, suicidal thoughts and suicidal expressions. Because, of course, the most tragic is a completed suicide. However, some people in crisis might actually do things to themselves that might eventually lead to an unwanted death, if that's the word to use. And again, comments that we've seen sometimes belittle these individuals, and therefore it's almost like they're pushing the individual to actually complete the intention.
So I do wonder, I mean, on the one hand, it's good that there's more conversation, more dialogue around mental health issues and how to support people in crisis, as you said. But, you know, with that, do you think there comes this greater need and urgency for a way to, not regulate, but to be able to moderate these conversations so that you don't take the wrong approach and you don't trigger somebody who's
truly, yes. So, you know, we often talk about things, for example, even in the panel discussions that we run with individuals, or even if you're part of a support group, it is advisable that these support groups are moderated. And similarly, these panel groups are moderated, just because we worry that individuals who are vulnerable might actually be affected by what's the conversations that's being discussed. Mm. Yeah, even the discussion that we're having right now, for example, in a way is slightly moderated, because we want to make sure that the masses of you that are listening to what we're discussing, doesn't feel upset or get, you know, triggered by some of the conversations that we're having. But at the same time, we need to be frank about this conversation, because it is happening in our communities, and there are things that we can prevent it from, escalating. Mm-hmm. And there are things that we can definitely do to make the situation much better. And if we don't have these discussions, then we're not going to be addressing the issue as well.
Yep. So then when we talk about media reporting and portrayals, which really is the main channel with which people receive news and information, how would you describe the current approach or portrayal of suicide that you see in the media today, bearing in mind sort of like the increased literacy that we have?
Yeah. So that's a really good question and a tough one to answer, actually. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason is because I actually do work with the media in a number of activities for mental health promotion. But to be fair to everyone that's listening, and also those who write media, you know, there's a lot of work that we all can do together. And there's a lot of work that we can do better. Now, why do I say that? Because now, in terms of media reporting, we have the standard media, like paper, radio, television.
Your mainstream,
yeah,
so to
mainstream
speak.
Media. Mm-hmm. But we've also got, and we've got alternative media, and we've got people that report media, even though they've got, they're not part of anything, you know, mm-hmm. like a blog mm-hmm. posting
yes.
or a website
yes.
posting.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about media reporting in terms of suicide, I think everybody needs to be on board. But of course, the mainstream media, to me at least, needs to take the lead in that, because most of the reporting or the re-reporting of these particular stories will probably be captured by the the mainstream media first. Mm-hmm. Now, if the mainstream media catches wind of the story from, say, somebody who's posted a viral video, then I think it is also the responsibility to at least report that message in a more neutral tone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and not take the same, hopefully not take the same direction that the non-mainstream, the way that it was reported,
yes,
that they've caught
with the video and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Does Malaysia, and I guess this would only apply to the mainstream media though, does Malaysia have sort of like some sort of code of ethics or regulations to govern the ethical way in which suicide is reported?
From what I understand, there is a set of code of conduct to a certain level to report certain news that could be probably harmful to the population. And also there is a way to actually enforce these as well in a very simple way as reporting. But in terms of how much is being done, at least from what we're seeing, what's reported, there are some questions about that, I think, personally. Because ideally, if all of those suggestions were taken on board, we wouldn't have any issues with the way that it's reported in the media, which at the moment some of us do have some slight towards the way that it's been reported.
Yes. But then as for the alternative media, your blogs and all the content that's on the internet particularly, which can't be governed, what do we do there? And a lot of people are getting their information through those channels.
Yeah, I know. That's the challenge. I think this was posed to one of the panelists in a recent forum that we actually had.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can recall from my take, is that there is a method through MCMC that you can actually report to them about content that you think might be a bit harmful. And then they will at least have a look and decide whether that content is safe or unsafe. However, as was mentioned by the person who came on board, if you're posting it from, say, an international website, our government is unable to do much about it apart from maybe advise these individuals to either take it down or at least to moderate some of the content that's actually been written because a complaint has been made, for example. But there's no real power, if I'm not mistaken, for them to go across and stop those unless it's probably a local site.
Yeah, and I think most frightening is things that are just spread through WhatsApp chat groups, has no there's no owner or host for it.
Yeah, exactly. I think these, sometimes social media is actually a powerful tool for good. But at the same time, you've mentioned, it can also be another method that could be used alternatively.
Mm. So we'll go for a quick break now. But when we come back, I would like to go into sort of what are the pitfalls or what are things that the media really need to look out for when reporting on suicide and to be mindful of how it impacts their listeners and their viewers. We're talking about suicide and the media on the psychiatry series today. Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist, University of Malaya Medical Center, in the studio with us. You're listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. On the psychiatry series today, we're talking about suicide and media coverage and portrayal of suicide. In the studio today is Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist from University of Malaya Medical Center. Now, remember, our phone lines are open. You can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio if you have any questions, concerns or thoughts, anything that you'd like to bring up, especially with Dr. Amir being in the studio with us. During the break, Dr. Amir, you brought up the term, the Werther's effect.
Yep.
So perhaps that's something that you could share with us.
Well, Werther's effect counters by this thing called Papageno effect. And I think it's important to note that in terms of Werther's effect, it's literally about copycats.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have media reportings on suicide that are extremely visible or visual in a way, then there's that risk that others who might be vulnerable, that read, cite, or hear about the way that we report our media or our reporting might then eventually end up following some of those instructions, if that's the word to use. And this has been shown in numerous studies that if there is a death of a prominent person and the reporting is not done in a very fair manner, then there is a possibility that there might be a slight crisis in that member country or that community, because there might be deaths that appear to be almost similar to the way that it was reported. And we call that the Werther's effect. Now, the opposite of that is what we call the Papageno effect, or a positive story towards the issues at hand.
Mm-hmm.
So things like, you know, informing people where to find help, informing people about the various types of health or psychosocial issues that might lead individuals to be vulnerable to begin with, the reportings about access to assistance might be able to tip the balance. So there was another big study that was done in communities where the Werther's effect wasn't able to be reduced because of whatever reason. That means people were still reporting in unfair ways, leading to problems happening within that community. But if you put enough positive stories about mental health, suicide prevention, for example, then there appeared to be a bit of a drop in terms of the copycats that might happen. So one of the ways that we have advised, and the way that when we're talking about suicide particularly, even if you wanted to report whatever you wanted to report, please do include within your blog, your report, about where to access help, or if individuals are struggling, where they can actually find assistance. For example, you'll see in some of the papers now, if there's a report of a death as a result of suicide, there's also at the very end a report about how to find help if you appear to be triggered by this particular report. And that would be the minimum, the most minimum. Of course, the maximum is to make sure that the way that you report that death is done in a very fair manner. Because the individual who dies as a result of suicide also has family members. And this is where we were a little bit concerned, because over the last few months, in this year alone, there have been reports where pictures were shown, and that's a no-no. There have been reports of places and methods that were shown or described or spoken upon. And again, that's a no-no. There were very sensational headlines, or fairly unfair headlines, that appeared to show that suicide is, in a way, almost glorified sometimes. Again, that's something that we would be against.
Or linked to character somehow.
Or linked to character, which has a judgmental tone. And again, these are kind of the don'ts of reporting on suicide. Now, going back to our discussion just now also, that we've also now been receiving not only official mainstream type of reporting, but also non-mainstream. And again, this is where the same message should be to anyone who would like to advocate on mental health or report on suicide in particular. Because sometimes we have good intentions. You know, you saw this particular accident, and you do want to inform people, and you're doing it with good intentions. But because of the lack of knowledge, possibly, that the way they report it appears to be a little bit too sensational. And then instead of getting the positive effects that you'd want, you actually get the negative effects. And that's why it's important for us to be wary about the Werther's effects, which is actually all the negatives put in one, and to be mindful about the Papageno effect, which is all the positives. And hopefully there's more positives than negatives that will be able to reduce rates of suicide.
Okay, we also have a caller with a question. Shafika.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Shafika. You have a question or a comment for us?
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Shafika, and I have a question for the doctor.
Yep.
I am clinically diagnosed. I have chronic depression. and I am a survivor of suicide.
Okay.
Yes, and so sometimes I stay away from social media because I feel like it's triggering.
Yep.
And so because you have people who post, especially on Twitter, people who post suicidal thoughts. So yep. Do you think social media is enabling the glamorization of suicide?
Thank you very much, Shafika, for that question. And with regards to what you're asking, I think social media, like I mentioned just now, has a possible for good and for bad. Mm. And if the problem with Twitter in particular is because it's all real time and it's very fast. Kan? If you miss that particular tweet, it just goes off. But at the same time, for other people who might be triggered, it might linger, that statement that was just a fleeting for most of us might actually linger for them. So in some ways, we want everybody to be mindful about it. And if you are a person who's struggling with your mental health problem and you find that social media is probably a trigger, the advice is actually to stay away. And I've asked patients myself that have problems being on social media and being triggered by the postings that are there, either to them or by other people to other people, that they should take a break from social media. We also know from data that social media for some vulnerable populations can lead to individuals having trouble in recovering from their mental health issues, in particular depression.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Shafika. Was there anything else you would like to ask Dr. Amir?
No, I think that's all. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shafika.
Thank you for listening, Shafika. So social media, that's really important as well because, you know, of course, young people in particular are so vulnerable to what they see and read on social media. Staying away would be really, it seems to me, very good advice if you feel that you're vulnerable at the moment. But is there anything that parents or, you know, those around young people or even anyone else who's at risk, is there anything that we can do?
Yes, definitely, Shawik. You know, some of the social media companies have actually put in place some safety features in a way or at least allowed for some level of moderation of the content that's being posted. So again, unless you're on your own blog, and I think blogs are a little bit, well, they still be hosted by somebody, but your own website, most of the social media platforms like Instagram, Twitter, and even Facebook has a feature for you to report if the content appears to be disturbing or inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was privy to some Instagram post that was posted by Befrienders KL, actually, mm-hmm. which shared with all of us who use Instagram that there's a cool feature on Instagram where if you post certain words that are dangerous, suicide being one of them, you will then be led to there'll be like a post that will ask whether you're struggling,
mm-hmm.
whether you need help. And then there'll be a link to where help is available.
Mm.
So it's just that little bit of a buffer for individuals who might be vulnerable, might have clicked it, might have actually got instant, in a way, instant information, but now have to go through one level of filter, which just might make them reconsider their initial intentions.
Mm.
Yeah. So then, you know, if they were struggling and they suddenly clicked, they put a word that was considered to be a hot word or a red word or whatever you call it, a red flag word, then Instagram in particular, when I checked it out myself, would then ask, you know, are you struggling at the moment? Are you suffering from something? Do you need help? And then at least that might, and I was thinking that it's actually really good because it might lead the people to just take that moment to reflect and then say, yes, I think I need help. And then they actually guide you to where to find help as well.
What can we do about images and videos though? Because I find those very pervasive and much more damaging in a way.
Yeah, well, I've come to the point of telling people don't click on the images and videos that come out, particularly on things like WhatsApp, you know, because they're just shared. But again, when it comes to Instagram in particular, it actually blocks those pictures.
Right.
Now, Facebook, from my understanding, doesn't. But if somebody has actually viewed it and they found it to be offensive or dangerous, you can then make a report and it will be taken down.
Mm.
And I think if you're asking me in terms of the community, What can we do? Mm. I think, you know, don't, I can't remember the word, but there's that bystander effect. You know, you see the thing and then you think that somebody else is going to do it. I think we've got to be responsible now that if you find the material to be offensive, then, you know, report it. And don't share it if it's on, you know, WhatsApp. Sometimes we also, oh, this looks interesting, and then you already know it's concerning. You think you want to help people by sharing, but I think it's better just to cut it at your level and not share it anymore. And that could be one way.
I guess all this does sort of raise the question, should we perhaps just curtail any reporting, as far as news reporting goes anyway, should we just curtail any reporting of suicide altogether?
I think we should not. The reason, because if we do that, then we are going to be facilitating no discussions about this issue.
Which continues the taboo.
Taboo. Mm. It also continues the misinformation that other people get on this issue, because the ones who have the most knowledge are trying not to be reporting or talking about it. Mm. But I think what is important is that those who are wanting to discuss it or write about it should at least be knowledgeable in the way that report it. And, you know, there are research that show that you are able to get the same message across to individuals, but you don't trigger, in a way, a Werther's effect.
Mm.
Because, you know, for example, it's advisable not to put these kind of cases in the front page. It could be somewhere at the back. Individuals are reading through the paper. They see a report. The report should be neutral in the way that it's written. You know, we don't want a sensational headline that, you know, from another planet you can see kind of thing, you know. So you want it to just be informative.
Yes.
And again, you know, sometimes you might just use, you know, words like a death happened and whatever. Just to, you know, it's a PSA, it's a public service announcement, but you don't actually have to be very graphic about it. Now, pictures, of course, if you look at all the stats, normally pictures calls upon readers to look at that particular article a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe for this particular issue, we don't really need pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do need pictures, it might be a picture of a positive tone, like where to find help,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to a picture of a person who's just died as a result of suicide,
mm-hmm.
or family members grieving in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that adds value to the story. I think a picture of where to find help, you know, if you're struggling, call this number, or, you know, maybe a little bit of information about rates like we've done just now might be more useful for the public in this particular discussion. Now, when the report is also written, be mindful about the family members that are affected. We've still seen reports of names being mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And again, names can link to the families. And in a community that the stigma level is still fairly high in mm-hmm. these issues, and the information, like I said, mental health literacy is increasing, but it's not there yet.
Mm.
So, we still just need to be mindful that we might accidentally get other members implicated for a death.
Mm.
And some of these deaths could not, it's not confirmed to be due to a self-act in a way.
Yeah.
It could be a truly genuine accidental death, but the circumstances appears to be slightly ambiguous, unclear.
Mm.
But the way that we jump to the conclusion, to make the re-reporting back to say that that death was not due to suicide has already caused a number of problems for the bereaved and also their families as well.
Mm.
And I think that's where we need to be mindful. Similarly, again, you might want to report the state maybe if you want, or the place, but you don't really have to tell whether it was, you know, on whatever floor, for example, or the method.
Mm.
Because again, it doesn't add value, because it's almost just like you know, you're just wanting to almost be like a bit kipochi and finding out about that information.
That's the thing. I mean, you say that, Dr. Amir, but at the end of the day, for news organizations, it's, grabbing the readers.
Yeah.
It's selling your paper or whatever it is. It's getting the clicks. How do we balance that?
Yeah, well, that's a hard question. We posed this question to a number of colleagues in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all actually having that same kind of debate about what is okay and what's not okay. And I hear you loud and clear in terms of grabbing the reader's attention. But on our side...
Not that I'm condoning it.
Yeah, I'm just saying that in terms of people in the media, yes, I fully agree that there is some level of that happening. But I think on the side that I'm staying on, for example, we just need to be consistently discussing about it and coming to probably a middle ground on best ways to report it, with a little bit of interest for people to at least get to read it. Because even if we want to do health promotion, if they're not looking at it, they're just passing through, we won't get that message across. But at the same time, being fair to the family and also the person who is currently struggling.
All right.
Or died already.
I think a good thing to keep in mind is, you know, the backstory, if you're reporting about a suicide, if I read you correctly, the backstory should be about raising awareness about mental health issues and giving them a channel to seek help. The backstory should not be all the details that that are the personal details.
And I think now they're also talking about the language that you use, you know. You know, like just now, there was a word about glorifying.
Glamorizing.
Glamorizing. So the word itself also could be very important, you know. You know, it was a sweet death, for example. You know, it's not sweet. The person is already dead. There are people that are bereaved, they're actually grieving. So, you know, we need to be mindful of these kind of words and the way that we write about that particular act itself.
Speaking of glamorizing, after this break, I would like to go into popular media depictions of suicide and whether those are crossing the line into glamorizing suicide, and how I think for viewers and for family members and parents, how we can sort of try to mitigate that effect. We have in the studio with us Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Center, talking about suicide and the media. Remember, if you have a question or a comment, or if you'd like some advice, you can call 0377332900, WhatsApp 0187898899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, Tishao Eek. I have Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Center in the studio. It's our psychiatry series and we're talking about suicide and the media. If you would like to speak to us, you can call us at 0377332900. You can also WhatsApp your thoughts at 0187898899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. You know, Dr. Amir, we were talking about news reporting of suicide before this, but there's another aspect to media coverage, or media portrayals rather, and that's through popular media. And you have TV shows and movies that are attempting to talk about suicide, but the approach there really is going to make the difference in how it is communicated. So the TV series 13 Reasons Why sparked a lot of controversy over whether it was encouraging or glamorizing suicide, especially among young people. You know, what is the impact of shows that try to touch on the topic of suicide?
I think with regards to that particular show, there was a lot of discussion both on social media and also among clinicians about, and parents particularly, about this particular show. And I think there was also, if I'm not mistaken, one particular report about a death as a result of watching this show, and a father, or was it a mother, a father, I think, who was sharing about how the show is probably more negative than positive in its delivery. And from my understanding of the show, because I've not watched it after hearing about it, was that there are lots of graphic scenes in there. And some of the scenes appeared to be almost semi-glamorizing suicide. And I think one, if I'm saying one country, which I can't remember, it's one of the Western countries, actually made an official complaint as well to this particular production, because of the way that reported. And again, we need to be mindful about that. I'm aware of another show in Korea, a Korean drama, that also had some level of depiction of methods. And again, this caused some concerns. I was quite surprised, actually, because it was a Korean drama, because unfortunately, Korean has the unflattering ranked to be number one in suicide in the country, and are extremely sensitive to suicide. So for that show to get through. It was quite a bit of a surprise to me, at least. But yes, it is a challenge. We've brought this up to some colleagues or friends that do work in making films and reading the comments by producers defending their work, and they call it artistic work.
Mm.
And again, this is where there's that very thin, fine line between what is artistic and what I would consider to be dangerous.
Mm.
And again, we just need to be mindful about that. Now, if the content is from elsewhere, again, we can make official complaints, at least to our MCMC, that we feel that this show might not be appropriate for our people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not censorship. It's just that a health group or people, mothers and fathers or general public who are concerned that there might be more negatives, and then let them to decide. But at least we've played our part.
Mm.
But, if it was locally produced, definitely all of us here have a little bit of responsibility to consider whether or not that scene really needs to be put in there, or could it be artistically mentioned in another way without any glamorizing or detailing methods of the act, for example.
Do you agree that the creative industry should take on topics like this, and do they play a role in raising awareness?
I think it plays a role, but again, I don't want to say I agree or don't agree, because I worry that suddenly everybody wants to make a show on this. And then again, we might have a bit of a problem. But if you did want to, document about this issue for a positive benefit, maybe it is best for, our creative industry to also discuss with people or stakeholders that have a bit more knowledge, so that they can be guided. And I think that might be a win-win for both parties. In getting that across,
more consultation.
Yeah,
perhaps?
A bit of consultation. Mm. Yeah, in terms of the way that they document those shows.
Yeah, it's one thing, of course, to say that we can report or try and get stuff taken off the air, perhaps for on grounds of public health concerns. But if children and young people are already watching them, what can parents do?
Yeah, so, when we talk about children, the first thing that comes into my mind right now, Shoaik, to be fair, is this really disturbing thing that I've just found out about, the Momo Challenge.
Yes.
And I remember one of the workshops that we recently came from, they were talking about the Blue Whale Challenge that was a few years ago.
Mm.
And the Momo Challenge, unfortunately, is a bit mimicking the Blue Whale.
Mm.
And some people say that it's a creator. I know we were having this short discussion just now that there are reports that it's a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
But, talking to family and friends, there are kids out there who have actually viewed this particular character that, according to the reports at least, is wanting people to harm themselves.
Mm.
And I think this goes back to the general advice to parents about watching their children on what they're viewing. And I myself have also sent it off to my family just to be mindful about what my nieces and nephews are actually viewing as well, because of this particular challenge. And I think what's concerning is that I was informed that this guy named Momo comes out midway in a normal children video, and again, I don't have the answers for that. I don't know whether the parents want to screen every show before they show their kids. It's a challenge in itself to get kids to stay quiet sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, these are new threats that we are really just being exposed to nowadays because of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there are lots of positives of it, but these are some of the negatives that at least we just need to be mindful of. And I don't want to advise parents to say don't let their kids watch anything at all. I think that's not fair. But I think we just need to be mindful because, there are these kind of things that are out there.
If we're talking about very young children, though, and children as young as 3 or 4 do start watching videos and TV and are exposed to what's on YouTube, a lot of it content is good. It is educational.
Yeah.
But, if we're talking about something like the Momo thing, and I know I have heard of other similar challenges, so to speak, so not just the Momo one, what is... for young children, they may not understand it, right? But is there an impact in terms of, you know, if they are being exposed to it repeatedly?
Definitely there's an impact. There's a mental health impact that we have seen. And this is where, you know, to say that it's a hoax, I'm not so sure, because there were kids that when we do art therapy, or at least get them to draw about what their fears are, they actually drew the character of Momo. And these are kids as young as 4 years old. You know, people who are probably kids who are unable to really verbalize their concerns and fear, but have reported it. There was another one that I was informed of where he identified that he has seen this, but told mom not to actually say the name because worried that this character will then come and haunt them, haunt him, or take some, you know, it's a very disturbing type of reaction for a kid who really doesn't understand what he's just watched, but nevertheless is the behavior is altered as a result of that particular viewing. And I think this is where, you know, when I heard it, I'm also a little bit concerned just hearing about it. But again, I'm not a child psychiatrist, but just listening about it, it just is so scary, to be fair.
I'm a parent myself, so it's the same kind of concerns we all have. So, you know, if children are already exposed to it, like, what can we undo the damage?
Again, if the children is exposed and they're getting an effect as a result of that exposure, then I think it is warranted to at least discuss it. And we're hoping that families are communicating well, and their children are able to share with mom and dad when they're viewing content that is disturbing. Because that's how I found out about it, because a friend of mine was actually informed by her son about this. And that's when she sort of did a little more research in it, and then just shared it with us. But probably that family had a little bit more communication in them. And we're hoping that other families would at least have kids that would talk to them. But if not, if you're seeing your kid have an altered or changed behavior after maybe watching certain shows, or being, you know, being exposed to friends who watch certain shows, then probably it's best to call upon them and ask whether they have, what was the problem. And it could be, you know, it's also a good way to actually identify whether these kids are being bullied or not as well. But at least if it's related to watching or hearing certain content, and you see a sudden change in this individual, this child of yours, then it is best to at least, you know, get some clarification from him or her. And then if not, if you're really concerned because you're seeing your child to deteriorate, then maybe you want to bring him or her to see someone for that. And as I mentioned just now, for children, often some of the therapists, they actually do art as a way of communicating with the child. Sometimes they do certain role plays with the child, and that's where some of the information is then revealed during that course of assessment. And then, of course, these kids are still malleable in a way that they can be, you know, taught or at least encouraged to have better practices in helping them to not be affected permanently by these particular...
Perhaps be more resilient.
Be more resilient.
Going back to overall media coverage, you know, would you be able to share any examples of good coverage, good suicide, like good examples of suicide reporting in the media?
So, you know, we're currently working with our friends in the media and trying to come out with, you know, an acceptable a manner of reporting that is exciting, but, you know, at the same time is safe, if that's the word. And like I mentioned, probably one of the ones that have been reported is that to use neutral language is one. To avoid methods as much as you can is another, or at least sites. To avoid graphic photos, to avoid sensational titles, and to ensure that within the text somewhere that there is at least a call for help or a way to actually get help. And I think if you've done as you know that, then probably the way that you report it will still be quite exciting, but will be staying away from most of the dangers that might lead to vulnerable population to be affected. And I think this is a message and an advice for everyone that is writing or wants to write about this, irrespective of whether this is something that they do as a day job or something they do as a hobby. Because the way that news is now read and consumed, everybody plays a small part in this big issue of suicide and media reporting.
And on that note, we have our own reminder as well. If you are struggling with depression, suicidal thoughts, or you need to talk to anyone, you can call Befrienders KL at 03-7956-8145 or email sam at befrienders.org.my. We've been talking to Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist from University of Malaya Medical Center, about suicide and the media. Thank you very much, Dr. Amir.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.